This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, we'll have a conversation with Hall of Fame sports writer Hal McCoy. But first, winter must be officially over because Cincinnati's unofficial holiday, opening day, is finally here as the Reds welcome the Pirates to Great American Ballpark Monday for the first game of the season. Reds team historian Greg Rhodes, sports writer John Irardi, and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson join us to size up this year's Reds and take a look at the Finley Market Parade and other opening day celebrations. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Greg, John, and Howard, good to see you this afternoon.
Happy to be here.
Great to be here.
Great to be here.
And Howard, as we get started, you and Michael Keating have created a really touching video. It's a tribute about Reds baseball that's on the WVXU website. You guys did just a fantastic job with this.
Well, thank you.
Where did the idea for it come from?
Well, it was kind of a labor of love. I mean, you know, Michael and I sat and talked about this thing, and we talked about the fact that the All-Star game is coming. And I sort of had the idea of, you know, millions of kids dream of donning that major league uniform someday. I mean, it's a dream that's gone on for generations. I had it. I mean, there was a time when I thought I was going to be the third baseman of the Cincinnati Reds when I was a kid. Then I discovered something called a breaking pitch, and that dream pretty much died. But you know, they had that dream, and there's a small, very tiny number of people who actually achieve that dream. An even smaller number who become all-stars. And the Reds at the Hall of Fame and Museum this year have a beautiful exhibit about the 100 players in Reds history who have played in the All-Star game, you know, with their jerseys, their gloves, their memorabilia. And it's just, you walk through the thing and the memories just wash over you. So we wanted to do a video that would tell that story, and it's there for everyone to see on WVXU.org.
So you wanted to be a third baseman.
I did.
I wanted to be Johnny Bench.
Did you?
So yeah. I tried catching as a kid, and I found out it is really hard to get up and down from that squat in a game. I'm telling you, I don't know how they do it. You know, I love the way you talk about how baseball transcends the generations in this.
Yes.
It's a short video, but it's almost got a Field of Dreams feel to it.
We wanted it to, and we wanted it to have striking images. Michael Keating, as you know, is an outstanding photographer and videographer who makes beautiful images. And I tried to write a narration that would do those pictures justice. And we were very pleased with the way it came out. You know, we accomplished, I think, what we wanted to set out to do, which was to talk about that all-star dream, that dream of putting on a major league uniform.
So how do you top this, Howard? What do you do for an encore?
I don't know. We're going to think of something. Michael and I, actually, we are going to do some more projects for WVXU.org. So I guess we just have to stay tuned.
Let's put Howard at third base and shoot some footage of that.
Yeah, that's
a catch, Greg. Hey, I could pick it. I could pick it, Greg. I just couldn't hit that breaking ball.
Well, if you haven't had a chance to look at this video yet, I really, really recommend it. And again, you can see it at WVXU.org, the video that Howard and Michael Keating put together at WVXU.org. What's everybody thinking? You believe that opening day is almost here? It seems like, wow, the season just ended yesterday.
I mean, but once it got up to about 55 degrees, I was ready to get this season off the ground. It seems like it's just been a really long winter, and especially the end of winter there in February, March, when it was so cold. Mm-hmm. But forecast is pretty good for Monday. Not bad. Looks like rain maybe in the evening later on the day, but
stray shower maybe.
Yeah, and temps in the 60s, so as Ernie Banks used to say, let's play too.
Are we all planning to play hooky so we can watch the game? I know I am. Hope my boss doesn't hear this, but I'm planning on playing hooky for at least half the day.
Well, that's a great long tradition here in Cincinnati, Mark, so I think you should take full advantage.
Yeah, and we call this an unofficial holiday, but I think it should be voted as an official holiday. I think we should change this. Are we in agreement on that?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, you know, Greg, I mean, this is a celebration that's pretty unique, or is unique, in baseball.
Yes, we're the only team that has the honor of playing the first game of the of playing opening at home every year. We used to play the very first game of the season here on a pretty regular basis, but that tradition ended in the mid-'80s. But we still maintain this very long tradition of opening at home every year. And that then lays the groundwork for the parade and for all the other hoopla that you can schedule on an annual basis. And people know they're supposed to take, you know, they can take off work. And it's just a great civic institution and celebration. And as John and I have talked, and when we did a book on opening day a few years ago, it's that sort of grassroots basis for the whole thing that I think makes it work. If it were like a top-down thing, it'd be very different. But it's inspired by the love for this ball team, organized by you know, the guys up at Findlay Market. The Reds don't organize the parade. A lot of people think maybe, but it is the Findlay Market parade because the Findlay Market guys have been doing it for almost since about 1920.
This is so the 96th.
Yeah.
All right. That's just amazing. How do they keep the momentum going? I mean, 96 years. It's just as popular as ever, isn't it, Greg?
Well, I always say, you know, one of the great things about being the historian for the Reds and for having worked at the Hall of Fame all those years, when you've got a franchise that's about 145 years old or whatever, I mean, there's a lot of stories. There's a lot of tradition, a lot of generations, a lot of history. So, it's just, and as Howard said, it's unique. No other place has got it. And as John and I, again, in the book, we were talking, we were interviewing the players. And, of course, a lot of players moving around, a lot of different teams these days. But this was back in the era when Marge Schott owned the club, and she'd have the zoo animals down on the, you know, there'd be elephants down at Riverfront. And I remember this quote from Lenny Harris, the well-traveled Lenny Harris. And he says, "I've seen a lot of opening days, but it's sure hard to top those elephants in Cincinnati."
Who's the Grand Marshal for the parade this year?
Three.
Okay.
The Nasty Boys.
Yeah. Really?
That's
great,
right.
Great players, great pitchers
from the 1990 championship
season,
team.
25 years ago. Yeah. Rob Dibble, Randy Myers, and Norm Charlton. Yeah. Great threesome.
Those guys were really
and
good.
And those three also will throw out
simultaneously. Who's your money on? I'd bet on Dibble.
Who gets the plate?
He may throw it off the backstop.
I'll bet on Randy.
Yeah,
Well, the interesting thing nobody knows is only going to be one catcher and three guys.
Howard, you've thrown out a first pitch at a Reds game.
Yes,
you ever do a simultaneous pitch?
Well, yeah, it was. Actually, it was Michael King and I both at the same time in May of 2012, right after we left the Enquirer. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was a thrill, you know, to be able to do that. It was a great game, too. They were playing the Braves, and Frazier hit a walk-off home run to win the game. I mean, it was just a great experience being out there and being able to do that for once in your life.
Well, Greg, you bring up such a good point there. There's just so much tradition that surrounds opening day in Cincinnati. I mean, you just don't find anything like that anyplace else.
Well, and, you know, because there is such a long history, it's a really fascinating story. And it goes all the way back to the horse and buggy days in Cincinnati, all the way back to the turn of the last century, 1880s, 1890s. A guy by the name of Frank Bancroft, one of John's favorite projects, writing about Frank Bancroft, business manager of the Reds for probably 30 years. And he really helped start the opening day tradition. It was under Banny's watch that we start getting the first parades and all the hoopla and the ceremonial first pitches and that kind of thing. And it started to become a sellout, a really hot ticket. And even as far back as 1900, you find comments in the paper jokingly, you know, they're talking about how many aging relatives died once again, you know. So everybody had to get off work. It was their built-in excuse for opening day.
Some kids, their grandma died like 5 years in a row or something.
So speaking of how the season's going to go, John, what do you think of the Reds this year? I mean, what do you see as their strengths this year?
Well, I went out to get the morning paper today, and my neighbor yelled out, "How are the Reds going to be this year?" And I said, well, usually on the radio, I'm pretty optimistic. I'll say if they stay healthy, they'll win 89, 90, 91 games. But in my heart of hearts, if I was a betting man, I would say that they'd be lucky to finish 500. And the pitching is not going to be as good as last year, I don't think, at least in the starting rotation. They've lost two key guys. And the bullpen might be okay if Badenhop comes around, the guy they got as a free agent out of Boston. But it's going to be all, to me, dependent upon how well Joey Votto and Jay Bruce come back. That's the guts of this team offensively, and they have to have big bounce-back years.
You know, I think, I mean, top to bottom, this is a good lineup, okay, if they are healthy and if they produce to their capabilities. And we know what their capabilities are. They should be able to score runs. I mean, what happened last year with the injuries and the multitude of the injuries, you know, Devin Mesoraco was on the DL twice. Obviously, Votto lost 100 games. I can't imagine how that could happen again. I think you're right about the starting staff. I think that is a big question mark. Although I will tell you the truth, Alfredo Simon, whom we traded away to Detroit, I think had a career year last year, and actually a career half year, because after the All-Star break, he was not the dominant starter that he was in the first part of the year. So if DeSclafani, you know, a new member of the rotation, can come through, and he looks very good, then you're also depending on Jason Marquis, a veteran pitcher who has had some hard times, had some injuries in the past, but had a very good spring. There's a lot of question marks about those guys, and it's going to depend on that, and it's going to depend, as you say, on this bullpen kind of reforming and reshaping itself.
Right.
Going from, you know, a very poor bullpen last year, and it was a very good bullpen in 2013, and we got to get, you know, find a way to get back to that kind of a
mix. The Reds lost more one-run games last year than any other team in baseball.
That's right.
And that's the kind of thing that really can turn, you know, a mediocre season into a pretty good season if you can at least be 500 in those games. You know, part of it was a function of the bullpen, and part of it was a function they didn't score enough runs last year. I mean, they just, their offense was weak.
The offense was weak.
A lot of times you point your finger at the bullpen, but ideally you're not in those close one-run games. You know, you're scoring five, six runs a game. And so we'll see. I mean, a lot of the question marks that people had coming into this spring, I mean, was Votto going to be healthy? Bruce back swinging again? And we got through with no serious injuries, it looks like. As you say, Frazier and Mesoraco both had sort of breakout years last year, and they're young enough that you would think that's going to continue. Bruce is in his prime at 28. Votto, I mean, if Votto can just be what Votto was a couple of years ago, Brandon Phillips, you know what you're going to get out of Brandon. And Cozart, you might not get great offense out of Cozart, but you're going to get outstanding defense. Same with Billy Hamilton in center field, although it's going to be interesting to see where he bats in the lineup this year. Left field with Marlon Byrd is, to me, is still a little bit of a question mark. Guy's got, you know, a lot of experience under his belt. Hopefully he's got one more good year.
I don't know if you guys noticed this or not, but in the last few weeks, last couple of weeks of spring training, Billy Hamilton, one of the problems last year was, you know, he was hitting way too many fly balls. Way too many fly balls, and he doesn't have the power to get out of the ballpark. So, you know, what good is that? This year in spring, he was hitting more line drives, more balls on the ground, more stuff up the middle.
And we'll continue our conversation about the soon-to-start Reds season. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's going to be a three-day weekend for a lot of people with Reds opening day coming up on Monday. And joining me this afternoon are Reds team historian Greg Rhodes, sports writer John Irardi, and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jim sent us a question. He wants to know our thoughts on the Wrigley Field renovations. Are they good or are they sacrilege? My personal vote is sacrilege.
Well, my feeling would be that if Wrigley Field's going to continue to exist, you're going to have to put up with this. I don't know how. I think that it's better than them demolishing the ballpark.
Oh, yeah. That's
what
true.
I would say.
Right.
And
Fenway Park's undergone a lot of renovations, too.
Yeah.
And it's the same idea. Some people don't like what they did with Fenway in Boston, but do you want to have a new ballpark instead of Fenway? No. And
or I think see it fall down. Okay. That's a good
but
point.
But, I mean, Chicago, to me, Howard, maybe you can comment on this, is that even we have all these new ballparks, Chicago's still one of my favorite two or three ballparks.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful place. I mean, it's made for baseball.
Right.
You know, the ivy-covered walls and the bleachers and everything else that goes with it. I mean, it's a fantastic place, but I agree with Greg. I believe it has to be upgraded if it's going to continue.
Yeah.
I'd rather have the structure there and not torn down and turn into condos or something.
Right. It would have been a terrible thing that the same year Ernie Banks died that they raised Wrigley Field. We wouldn't want that.
Right.
Anyway, we were talking about Billy Hamilton earlier, and that's one of the guys I'm really excited to watch this season. Reds had a pretty miserable on-base percentage last year. I think it was .296, so they're getting on base less than a third of the time. And if he really starts to come around, he could make a huge difference in this team's offense, couldn't he?
Well, I mean, that's a big come-around because you mentioned the team average for on-base. That was pretty much his average for on-base,
which
you can't have that in the leadoff spot. And I think that's the message that Reds manager Brian Price was sending this spring, which is Billy, and Howard makes the point, hit the ball on the ground. Billy, if you're not going to get on base, we can't have you in the leadoff hole.
Right.
You're going to have to bat seventh or eighth. So I voted last year for him as Rookie of the Year. I think I was one of three writers to do that. But again, in my heart of hearts, if I had to do it again, I probably wouldn't have, because even though it's unfair, I have to say a huge reason why this team went downhill in the second half of last year was Billy Hamilton. He wasn't getting on base.
But John, don't you think that the fact that was his first full major league season.
Yes.
He had played in the minor leagues where they do not play 162 games. And he kind of hit the wall at what would have been the end of a AAA or a AA season.
Right.
And it's a matter of stamina.
And he's a slightly built guy.
He's a slightly built guy, about 165 pounds.
Right.
And
so you can see that he might have gotten a little bit worn down. But his problem started earlier than that. I mean, I think he struggled a little bit offensively for most of the season. He did not, as you guys said, he just wasn't getting on base enough. And in fact, the Reds have that problem up and down their lineup. They have a lot of guys. I mean, everybody in baseball strikes out more than they used to. It's very frustrating as a fan. You think, why can't these guys put the bat on the ball? But strikeout rates are up all over the game. But with a guy like Hamilton or your guys up at the top of the order, you really need guys who can get on base 35-38% of the time.
Right.
Back in the heyday of the Big Red Machine, I am reminded by our host T-shirt here, who is so well attired here for this discussion today. You had Pete Rose leading off, getting on base about 40% of the time.
That's astonishing, too.
Ken Griffey batting second, and he was on base 38-39% of the time. And Joe Morgan batting third, and he was on base about 43% of the time. I mean, no wonder they scored so many runs. I mean, Bench and Perez and Foster were always coming up there with guys on base. And that's really the key to this, I think, to the Reds scoring more runs, is finding some guys at the top of that lineup that are going to get on base.
And Billy's got to bunt more. He's got to lay down bunts for hits. I think you'll agree with us, John, that Billy Hamilton, at least, one of the things he's got going for him is that he is probably the most coachable kid that's come along in a long time. He's had some pretty good mentors in baseball, you know, Delino DeShields, Eric Davis, you know, people that he takes seriously. and he wants to learn, he wants to get better, and he will work at it. He's done that. He did that at every level of the minor leagues. And I honestly, God, I mean, I'm just pie in the sky here, but I believe that he will do that in 2015.
And all I know, Howard, is when he gets on base, Billy Hamilton is, he's fast.
Well, yeah.
I've seen him make some really exciting plays on the bases, and I just think if he can get on, there's a lot of opportunity with him.
Oh, yeah.
And he was thrown out last year at a pretty high
rate.
It was surprising.
Right.
I was shocked at that, especially after I'd heard Joe Morgan say, I think it, at some point in the last few months early in Hamilton's career, I don't think – Morgan was saying, I don't think I can teach this kid anything about stealing bases.
Yeah, right.
And then – he has that year last year where he just didn't have a very high success rate. So clearly he's got a little bit more to learn there. And, you know, it is a big jump from the minor leagues to the major leagues. And that first year can often be difficult and rough in some places.
Well, yeah, those major league pitchers are a little smarter, you know, about holding runners on base and you know, getting people, you know. I mean, it's not Triple A. It's not Double A. It's not Dayton. This is the big leagues, and he's still getting used to it.
And the unfortunate thing, Mark, and I will say this, is in the big leagues, you don't get a chance to learn on the job because this team's window is this year.
Right.
There is not another
that's true
window.
Of professional
if they don't
sports
win this year,
yeah.
We're looking at a rebuild. So hopefully Billy is ready for prime time.
Well, Brandon Phillips, by the way, John, you know, his on-base percentage, his slugging percentages, those have been dropping, I think, for three straight years now. Does he get back to form?
I've got a good friend who's in the analytics business, and he said Brandon Phillips is his pick for bust of the year.
Oh, no.
And
don't put him on your fantasy team.
Well, don't put him in the leadoff spot for sure because he's the only guy that can really probably handle leadoff. He's actually has 35 points better on base percentage than Billy Hamilton. Problem is, you're absolutely right, Brandon has greatly fallen off the last 3 years or so, and his spot on a good team is probably more in the seven hole.
Yeah.
So I do think, I agree with Howard, hopefully Billy Hamilton comes through, probably Votto in the two hole, and then maybe we think about Frazier three, possibly Mesoraco four, maybe Bird or Bruce five, and you go from there. But Howard's right. If this team stays healthy, they'll score some runs. I just hope it's enough runs.
Right. You know, baseball, in fact, this is true of all professional sports, but it's a cruel game once you get past 30, early 30s. I mean, it's
absolutely.
It's inexorable. You're just going to start that decline, and it's hard to bounce back. But Brandon is in great shape, and his, you know, I don't care if he's in the lineup and he's playing second base, it is still worth going down there to the ball. You're still going to see some great defensive plays out of
that glove has not declined.
He's one of the best second basemen the Reds have ever had in terms of defense.
This team is tremendously exciting from a watchability standpoint.
Yes.
I mean, to have Chapman come in the ninth like he does, you got the great second baseman. Cozart, any really good team should have a great shortstop. Frazier, even though he's 27, 28, still is electric.
Well, and you get the Frank Sinatra music on the walk-up.
there you go.
The only player in the league that does
and,
that.
And Jay Bruce in right field, who
he's
is, you know, to me, is a gold
great
glove
caliber.
No question.
And Billy Hamilton,
right,
who plays
fantastic.
One of the widest center fields of any he's going to make a great player, too, also. The Reds have, in the last several years, been a pretty good defensive club, very good defensive club.
One of the best.
That will help.
Well, you think the pitching can hold up? I mean, if they're not getting as much run support as they should be, how's that going to work?
Well, I mean, I've had this conversation with other people. Maybe Howard can comment on this. I always wondered why was Matt Latos a better pitcher than Homer Bailey, because Homer's stuff on a given night could be the best in baseball. Witnesses two no-hitters. To me, the only thing I can think of, and I learned this from Tom Seaver a long time ago, you have to be able to pitch without your best stuff on a given night, and I'm convinced that Bailey can't do it. Now, I've told both of these guys this, and I'll tell you this now, Mark, is that if Homer Bailey has a big year, if he pitches like legitimate number one, this team will be right in the hunt, because I think everything else will slide into place. If he's just an average pitcher, it's going to be a long year.
Yeah. Any starting pitcher that goes out there, I mean, more often than not, he is not going to have his best stuff.
That's right.
And you have to be able to learn to adapt to that and move, you know, and change the way in which you approach hitters. Some can do it, some can't. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, Homer Bailey is just going to have to either learn or not learn.
Mm-hmm.
If he's going to get better.
But, you know, anybody in this room can comment on this. One of my favorite things about any spring is a young stud in the rotation, and that's Iglesias, the kid from Cuba.
Yeah.
I mean,
uh-huh.
Even though he might only get one or two starts because Bailey's coming back, Bob Housen, the architect of the Big Red Machine, would always take two or three guys north who are young just to invigorate a ball club.
Right.
And that's one reason I like Iglesias so much. I'm not quite as sold on Jason Marquis because there's a ceiling on how much he can do.
Right.
With Iglesias, there is no ceiling.
Right.
I've heard so many good things about Iglesias,
Four pitches, you know, bona fide.
Iglesias
well, how old
probably,
is he? He's 23?
Yeah, really
young. Yeah, very young. I mean, he'll probably be there, you know, to fill in for Bailey until Bailey's ready, and then he'll go down to Louisville and he'll get regular starts. The one thing you got to remember about Iglesias, all the talent that he has and all the pitches that he has, if you look at the Cuban numbers – he's never pitched more than 82 innings in a season. And now sometimes the Cuban stats are kind of iffy, but we don't know what he would do over a full major league season at this point. But I do believe he'll be back, and he will be a part of this rotation long term.
But you're right. They'd have him on pitch count.
Oh, yeah. They have him
on an innings limit this year.
Have to.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing about Iglesias is I know you want him to be a starter, but I'll come back to the same thing. This team's window is this year, and if he can give me good innings, I put him in the bullpen just because they've got to get innings out of
Well,
guys.
On opening day, the glass is always half full on opening day.
Right, exactly.
So, it's a new season and a new day.
It's the excitement of opening day in Cincinnati, and I got nothing but high hopes for the Reds for 2015.
Howard, I know you're a glasses half full kind of guy. I've seen several national publications that have the Reds finishing fourth or fifth in the NL Central. You think they're underestimating the Reds?
Well,
maybe?
I mean, I think they could be. I mean, you look at this division, and these teams are pretty well matched up, I think. The Cubs have obviously improved themselves. To a certain extent, the Cardinals are the Cardinals. The Pirates are a good ball club, although I think that they have some holes too. The Brewers, you know, led the division for most of the season last year until they kind of fell apart at the end. I think this is going to be a division where the difference between the top and the bottom is not going to be that great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be like 7 or 8 games maybe. Or 10 games, you know, from the bottom to the top. So, to me, it's anybody's to win. It's, you know, everybody's to lose.
Greg and John, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Happy to be here, Mark. Thanks a lot.
It's great.
Reds team historian Greg Rhodes and sports writer John Irardi. Coming up, Howard and I will be talking with sports writer Hal McCoy. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.